After the very serious episode we had, I'm so glad we're doing something a little bit more cool, a little bit more laid back.
A little more lighthearted, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more funny. I'm gonna start with the fact that I actually got to play SimCity for like an hour last night,
Oh,
and
how was it?
it was so much fucking fun. It was like an insane amount of fun. And I've kind of like, even though I've only played an hour, and I'm still like mentally working on. I got a copy of it, and I have to write a review for it. That's why I have a copy of it. So like, that's why I shouldn't be complaining that much. But I feel like the game, when you get to play it, is an incredible amount of fun, and that in itself is what you like the game is selling itself on. It is an incredibly fun game. If you like previous, if you like previous, what would you call it? Sort of previous iterations of the SimCity franchise, then you are going to love the hell out of this. It's a lot of fun. The region, sorry, not the regions, but like the areas that you play in are a hell of a lot smaller than previous games. Like, I only played SimCity 4 very briefly, but I feel like the map, like, I don't know if it's because it's the first map or because it's, or if it's like the whole thing, but it's a lot smaller than I initially thought it was, but it could be just because it's just the first level. The things that I'm really worried about and I'm pissed about is the fact that I can't save the fucking game to my hard drive.
Isn't that like what a lot of people are complaining about though? Like the fact that
No,
you can only play as multiplayer?
it's not the fact that you can only play as multiplayer, is you have to always be online to play it.
Yeah.
It's and that is frustrating in itself, the fact that I can't you have to constantly be connected to the EA cloud, and I haven't been able to check at all this morning whether or not my game was saved. I've just been constantly getting the exact same errors, like unable to connect to servers unavailable, hey, maybe you should connect to a different server, and I'm just like, they're all busy or they're fucking full, and like I feel like there is a lot that can be said about EA and how they've handled things in the past, and we covered that in the last episode. We don't need to go into it again. But
Yeah.
I feel like they've sort of put themselves into a position where I don't know how they weren't expecting something like this. Like when you ship a certain amount of units and you know how many people have pre-ordered it on Origin, you have to be expecting, a certain amount of server space, like at least, like, the server space that you originally calculated, plus 10%, or backup servers or fucking something. Like, you really can't, sort of create, a game that, requires servers and this and that and the other without even thinking about, yeah, that maybe, a lot of people will really like our game that we've heavily marketed, that, in our beta testing had some really great reviews, and, a lot of people saying, this game is fantastic, this game is great, you'll really enjoy it, when you get to play it and stuff like that, and then release it on such a wide scale worldwide and have people, just freak out when all the servers don't work. Like, I can't imagine anybody right now who's actually playing the game. Like, I mentally can't fathom that. I understand that it's busy because so many people are playing the game, but I mentally can't fathom that anybody is actually playing the game due to the amount of negative backlash that is,
Well, what's
happening.
probably going on is that there's like, I'd say there's like 10 people. Oh, that's a wild, exaggeration, but there's probably like a really small amount of people who are actually playing the game, and they're probably enjoying it so much that they're just not leaving the server. Or something like that. I don't know. Like, that's just hypothesizing, but it's just like if I was playing a game that had limited server space and all that kind of stuff, and like when I get into a game, I get into a game. Like I will not stop playing. Like I'll be at work and I'll just be like, yeah, hurry up and finish and get home and start playing that again. And then like I'll wake up and before I even go to the toilet, my computer will be on just to like get that game ready, kind of thing. Just things like that. So I know people might be just camping servers just to keep their spot so they don't have to deal with the shitty wait times or something like that.
Well, here's the thing, is that every time I actually got into the game, and I had to go do something and stuff like that, and like for periods of time, I basically I had the game on, had the game running, had the game going, everything was going great. I'm actually in my city. Then I would pause it. And, you know, because I don't want to, like, you know, waste power, like, I know I'm not paying the electricity bill, but there's no reason for me to be a dick about it. I closed the laptop, made sure, you know, it powered down, that I, you know, and then I, you know, went to the bathroom. And then I would come back, and somewhere in between that time, and I don't know if this is a Windows error, or if it's because of Origin, or if it's because of the game itself, my whole computer would crash. So I would lose.
Whole computer.
Whole computer would crash, and I would have to boot it up again, and it would be like, "Hey, an unexpected error occurred," and I was like, "Ah, fuck you!" You know, it's such a frustrating thing, and I hate it so much. I hate it with such a passion. And basically, what had actually happened this morning was basically EA had released a patch. And a part of the patch, which I believe was either a part of their press release or was basically a part of the news outlets that were reporting it, was they had patched some what basically they described as non-critical SimCity gameplay features, so they could address the server issues. And I thought, great, that's fantastic. You know, they addressed the things that, you know, people were going to have problems with. You know, like, you know, maybe some server crashes, this, that, and the other. You know, they may be disabling some of the social media sites. No, none of that. None of that at all. None of the fucking constant online bullshit that you have to deal with. None of the, you know, extracurricular social media, you know, things that we have to deal with. Basically, they fixed, you know, a few bugs and a few crashes, and they disabled cheetah speed. Which, for those who have not played the SimCity games, there are three types of speeds that you can play in the game. There's Turtle, Llama, and Cheetah. Cheetah being the fastest, so the game speeds up and stuff like that. And they got rid of that completely.
Oh, really?
Because the way that a lot of people were playing it on Cheetah, so, you know, they could actually get through most of the game and enjoy themselves. I like to play it on Llama, because, you know, I like to sort of see my city grow and expand and blah blah blah. But I like Cheetah when things get boring and I can speed shit up. And now they've completely disabled it.
Well, that's the problem with this DRM. It's the fact that you can't actually enjoy the game like you used to. Like, I don't know. It baffles my mind completely that EA would think, or Maxis, whoever actually came up with the idea, would think, oh, this SimCity franchise, one that, like, a city simulation, one that's actually, like, you know, people have, like, proclaimed this game from the mountaintops because of how much fun it is.
Yeah.
Let's take the aspect which people found the most fun about and the most used, which was the single player. The, like, because I don't remember people, like, in all the past SimCities that I've played, you know, I've never played, and, like, I've had groups of friends who have played them at the same time. We've never played the multiplayer function. We've never thought, oh, that's going to be fun, like,
Yeah.
trying to build, like, and sure, there's people out there who want to build cities with other people, but you shouldn't be forced to. And
No,
that's,
no.
there's this trend in, like, and I'm going to bring the Sony conference into this. It's the fact that you know, there's been all these, there's this giant push in gaming at the moment where I don't know, I think every other game company is looking at what Valve and Steam are doing, and they're thinking, oh, well, you know, Steam, it's all about being social with your games and stuff like that. You know, that must be it. That's what must be what gamers want. That must be why Steam is so successful at the moment, because it has an incredible social aspect.
No,
No, not at
no.
all. That's the biggest. Like, that's the worst idea I've ever heard of. Like, you know, just try, like, because gaming is a purely antisocial thing. Like, when
Yeah.
I'm in my room playing video games, like I do a lot of the time, you know, I've got my curtains closed, I've got my door closed, you know, I'm cut off to the world. I don't want to be around other people. I want to play Civilization 5 and feel like a dictator and, you know, rule the world. I want to go play Counter-Strike and, you know, feel like I'm a police officer or a terrorist and, you know, kill
Yeah, yeah,
people and
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like that. Like, it's the fact that, like, you know, this force for social aspects in games, it's really annoying me. And it's like it happened in and I'm sure it's annoying a lot of other gamers as well at this point. It's like, you know, it happened with Diablo 3, it happened with SimCity, and it's gonna happen with the PS4 when it's eventually released.
But if you think about it, video games are the only fucking medium that has that sort of social aspect forced upon you. Like, you know, movies, you sit in a quad, you know, theater, and everybody shuts the fuck up because that's what's expected, and that's how you enjoy the film. You take in the dialogue, you take in the visuals, you take in the music, you take in the entire experience, and then afterwards, you take a constitution with a friend, or you go to dinner. That's when you fucking discuss it. Like or when you read a book, you sit down, you maybe put on some very light music, or you go somewhere quiet, and you read the book, but you don't fucking highlight the fucking passages you love, and then you go up to people and like, oh my god, I read this part here about where you know Fitzgerald talks about the fact that they're moving through the train system, and it's like moving through eyes, and you know, shit like that. It doesn't happen in any other fucking medium except for gaming.
And sometimes it does. Like with the whole book thing, like, you know, we all, most of us learn to read in group situations where, like, you know, they'll have story time at schools, or, you know, if we have siblings, or, you know, if even if you're an only child, you know, your parents will stay up reading to you as a child unless your parents hate you. Case you have to learn to read by yourself, but there are social aspects to all these things, but they're all usually by choice, or they're never being forced upon you, and that's definitely it. Like when you go to a movie, I love sitting in a cinema by myself.
It's so relaxing.
It's the best. Like if I'm seeing a movie on its last week of its run in the cinemas, like I am so happy because I've got a guaranteed empty cinema most of the time, and it's just, you know, it's really fun. Like, and part of that comes from the fact that, you know, I have this giant room and I almost feel like it's just dedicated to me or shit like that. You know, it's also like, I don't know, when you go to a movie, like the cinemas, you always gamble on who else is going to be there. You know, there's always the chance that there's a like, I went and saw, what movie was it? I can't remember specifically which movie it was, but I went and saw a movie at a cinema not long ago, and this cinema serves alcohol and stuff like that.
Oh, shit.
And the night that we went there, there was, the movie that we went to see, it was booked for, there was a reservation for this work party.
Yeah.
Some place. And so there'd been this group of people who'd been drinking and having fun and partying for a good, you know, like 2 to 3 hours before they actually went into the cinema.
Yeah.
And then there was me and the couple of friends I went with. And, you know, like, the cinema just decided to lump us in with them, you know, rather than have an entirely different cinema open just for three people to watch the same movie. So they just, like, lumped us in there. And there was this one bitch who was so drunk that I hate people who shush in cinemas. Like,
oh God, yeah.
I think it adds to the problem. You know, it like, yeah, sometimes, like, well, most of the time, people need to be told to shut up when they're in the cinemas. But, you know, shushing can, like, you know, it can end in, like, just a shush war, or
people
can get actually aggressive, and, like, there can be fights that break out in cinemas and stuff like that. But it's just, like, no, I've never felt more compelled to stand up out of my chair and, like, go and try to get an usher to take her out or stuff. But she'd just yell things all through the movie. She'd say things to the people who were sitting next to her way too loudly. She'd laugh at all the dumb jokes. Like, you know, and that's what really gets me. When you see a joke in a movie, or, like, something that's dumb, something that's trying to play to the lowest common denominator, and when there's one person who laughs at that, you're just like, you dumb cunt. Dumb, uneducated cunt. Get out of here. I don't know. That's me being an elitist and a pretty big asshole, but oh well.
Also, you use the C word. I was going to say that...
Well, I like the C word. So
I know. I think that there is a part of this sort of cinema experience. And I it was great because I had to do a lot of research on this last year for one of my media classes, where the fact that... The whole cinema going experience that, it was meant to be sort of a crowd going experience, you know, initially, you know, back in the day when, you know, you would go see a film and, you know, but it wouldn't be a full feature film. It would be like a series of, you know, short features back to back that would be like 20 to 30 minutes apiece. And then you would have, you know, animations in between, and you would go see that with friends, and the theater to some degree was designed like old sort of Nickelodeon theaters, or, you know, sorry, not Nickelodeon theaters, old theaters that would have Nickelodeons outside and stuff like that, like the little things where Nickelodeon was actually a small device in which you would put a nickel in and you would view a very small, like, bit of, you know, animation or something or other in like a little zoetrope, or it's a tiny little machine and you put your eye to something that views it, and that's what it is.
They quickly got taken over by the pornography market.
Yes, they did. A lot of Nickelodeons actually turned into porn Nickelodeons. But that's more of a segue into how the Disney Channel went from animation into pornography.
Yeah, well, have you seen Miley Cyrus lately? Like,
I know.
You might as well.
I know. It's a not. Actually, I found out some time ago there is an actor who used to be on her show, what's it called? Hannah Montana, who was 30-something. Like, her brother was played by a 30-year-old actor. And Billy Ray Cyrus is, like, 50 when that show was airing. And it's, like, I'm going to look it up now. But, yeah, like, what I was going to say is that, yeah, no, it was, films were a social experience. And you know, people would get together and they would see the films and, you know, that would be awesome and stuff like that. But the theaters were designed so they would have rows where you would stand, and as opposed to rows where you would sit down and stuff like that. And that's awesome. And that, you know, makes for discussion, because you would turn to someone and you'd be like, "Oh, what do you think of this? Wow, look at the gams on that girl," you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, as things sort of went on, you know, things got sort of more interesting and films got more sophisticated to some degree. And, you know, there was a lot of, more films being made to, I guess, last longer, you know, what we sort of consider feature films, stuff like that. And then you've got your sort of the evolution of the auteur theory, and then the dismantling of the Hays Code, and this, that, and the other. And sort of we have now where, you know, films themselves are to some degree best viewed, you know, in your room on a laptop with big headphones on or with a big ass sound system, you know, because you want to take in that experience. Like, it's, there's a
but it really varies on the experience itself. Like, I don't know. I remember when I was growing up, when the new Star Wars trilogy, like I'm not old enough to have, neither of us were old enough to experience the original trilogy and the original theatrical release in cinemas. We of course got the shitty digital remasterings that they re-released in cinemas during the 90s, and that was disappointing, because I always had the VHS copies of the movies, and I remember going in and seeing the shitty CGI and being like, this isn't the movie I remember, and stuff like that. But watching the new trilogy was a lot more fun in the cinemas than it was ever by myself. Like, when I remember, because I went to the Attack of the Clones, like, midnight premiere.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, they had this competition, like, this costume competition going and stuff like that. So there were people sitting in the crowd dressed as Chewbacca, Darth Vader, all the, you know, the big characters that are fun to dress up as and stuff like that. And it was actually, like, you know, there would be key points in the film where people would cheer out, you know, where, like, the first showing up of the Jedis, you know, everyone would be like, yeah, Jedis, like, and stuff like that. And, like, you know, it was one of those films that was really clear-cut, you know, made for, it was a fun movie made for a lot of people to kind of take in at once and stuff like that. But when I got the DVD for it and I tried watching it by myself, completely different experience, and it's just been degrading ever since I did then. So there are some times I'll reserve that, you know, it is better to be in group situations for that. And but still, like, we should always have that choice. That's the thing. Like, you know, if I want to build a city with a whole bunch of people, or if I want to build one by myself, that's my prerogative, and I shouldn't have a gay, like, you know, some EA executive making that choice for me. That's what really kind of, I don't know, I want to draw it back to the Sony conference. That's what really annoyed me about it. Seems like they're pushing this more than anything else. They didn't even show the goddamn console. And I sound like a broken record for the internet and all public opinion.
No, yeah, yeah.
But when you can't show the console, but you're trying to flaunt this share button, like...
Oh, God.
The second I saw that,
like, the thing was, like, that conference happened, you know, a few days after... well, what we were talking about in the last episode, and basically I was I was out, you know, with my girlfriend, and sort of she was sort of talking with different people and stuff like that, and I went for a walk, because, you know, I really wasn't taking anything in, and I just felt like I just needed to take a walk, and I was just sort of listening to music, and then my Twitter updated and they were like, oh, PS4 conference, and I thought, oh, well, I'll try and watch that on my phone, and yeah, I actually found a pretty good 3G signal, and I was watching it and stuff like that, and then it got to the point where they were showing the share button, and I literally turned off my phone. There's like a button on the Android phone that I have, and you just press the side button and it just turns everything off. Everything went to black, and I closed my phone and put it back on the music I was listening to before, and I just went down and I went back to sit with my girlfriend in silence, because I knew I did not want to see any more of that. I eventually, like...
Oh, yeah, exactly. I just think, as a concept, like, I don't know. Like, I don't ever go on YouTube and look up other people playing games, except for the occasional Let's Play where I know the actual commentator is going to be funny.
Like mine. Like, you guys should watch Toadspit? No, go on.
No, plug yourself if you want.
Like, no, I mean, do... Do you sort of think that, like, people who sort of do those things? Because I know at times that I know that I'm not being funny, but I feel
Well, I
like.
know the Toad's videos that I appear on with you. It's just like I'm not. I don't try to be funny. I'm just playing the game.
I know,
Like,
exactly. Yeah, it should be
and like
natural.
you know, especially the Payday ones. Like, I don't make a sit. Like, I'll like. I don't make any kind of little witty comments or commentaries on the game at all. I'm just playing the game itself and stuff like that. Because I don't think that for some games you can't concentrate on trying to be funny and playing the game itself. Like, if you look at Conan O'Brien's thing, where he plays those video games, and it's the fact that he sucks at video games and stuff that funny and whatnot. Well, it's the thing that actually makes that funny is the fact he's not trying to concentrate on playing the game well. You know, he leaves that at the door. He's just like, yeah, I'm going to suck at this, but I'm going to try to make it as funny as I can. And that's why that bit works. It's because, you know, they're actually trying to be funny. And like, and then there's people who, you know, they'll record themselves playing the game, and then they'll do their commentary later. And it's just, I don't know, it's really retarded. Like, it sounds like, yeah, this I don't know, it's like people trying to do a really unfunny and bad imitation of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh
Like,
God, yeah. I feel like
yeah.
that's where a part of it sort of comes from, where like people watching, to some degree, Beavis Butthead and MST3K and I guess other Let's Players, because we're in that sort of postmodern idea of, where the internet's sort of going, where people just keep sort of ripping off other people until something new comes along. I mean, that's how memes work, to some degree. But it's sort of interesting that I'm starting to sort of wonder whether or not certain communities should ever be taken seriously again. I actually found out that, for those who don't know, that there's a sort of a series of Let's Plays, which is people who play games, called Game Grumps, which is done by two very, very funny human beings who make original creative content. There's John Jafari, who makes JonTron, and Aaron Hansen, also known as Egoraptor, and both of them make incredibly hilarious, awesome stuff. And they do a show called Game Grumps, which is actually really, really funny. But I found out that there are people who are fans of Game Grumps who have like claimed that there's like a jumping the shark moment for Game Grumps, where I'm like, fuck you! You can't say that about like a Let's Play thing. Like, they're still doing Let's Plays. It's not like they stopped doing Let's Plays and started doing, comedic skits at the beginning of them playing games. It's just them playing a fucking game. Like, fuck you for even like thinking of the condescending idea that it could be anything more than that. Like, unless you employ something extra in it, like you're creating some sort of analysis, or you're trying to push some sort of idea or metaphor, around the idea of you making these videos of Let's Plays. It's sort of like, it's so difficult trying to have a discussion with somebody. No, I'm not talking about you, but like with people who are just like, oh man, I feel like, Let's Plays have gone really, really downhill. It's like, it's somebody, like, unless you've just gotten used to their voice, or you've found their voice annoying, or you just didn't like a game that they played, they don't really have any concept to compare it to. Like, I feel like it's only,
Well,
30.
it's kind of like it's with most critics, like, or not so much critics, but well, I'm not sure if Let's Players are critics or if they're not, or where they really fall in that line. But there are two Let's Players which I do really enjoy, and that's well, I used to. I don't really follow them much anymore. And that's there's two YouTube channels. There's one called Kaz Tortle, and it's this guy Kaz, and he just has some of the funniest Let's Plays I've ever seen, purely because. Like, he doesn't try to play good games. Like, you know, he's not trying to beat anyone out to have the first Tomb Raider let's play out and stuff like that. No, he plays really shitty games and stuff like that. Like, Facade is it if like you know what Facade is and
Oh
stuff.
God, I love that game so
Yeah,
much. And I was
like
actually.
he does a let's play of Facade, and it goes for like I know a good 3 hours or something,
Holy
but I
crap.
laugh all the way through. Like the second part to it's like from start to finish it's just hilarious, because this guy, he's actually kind of funny, and he's just like he's not playing the game the way that the game wants you to play it, which makes it even funnier. And then there's the second, and he does it with a lot of different games, but it's just like he'll usually do it with shitty games and stuff like that. And then there's the second let's player, which isn't so much a let's player, but I'm probably getting this completely wrong, but it's Retsuprey or something like that. But it's basically a couple of guys who take other people's let's plays and then they do their own Let's Play over the top of that person's Let's Play.
Oh, no way. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. Like, and
That's
that's the way I
genius.
found Electrical Beast and stuff like that. And because they like their review of Electrical Beast Let's Play Mario 64, and like Electrical Beast, for those who don't know about the internet, is he's this guy who was doing this Let's Play of Super Mario 64,
Oh,
and
I
he was
love
going for a long time, but he's just like he has a ridiculously thick British accent. Like it's
it.
almost comically thick. You feel like he's putting it on, but he's not, and that's what makes it so great. And he also has this really weird, quirky side to him where while he's playing through Super Mario 64, whenever Bowser has anything to say or like on the screen, he'll put on his voice and do it, but he'll also ad lib like what Bowser says and stuff like that. And you'll just be watching this screen of Mario just running around in like a circle while you're listening to this incredibly British dude have a dialogue between himself where he's putting on two different characters of Mario and Bowser, and it just doesn't make any sense for a lot of the time. But it's just oh, it's hilarious on its own means, but it gains an even better level when you're listening to someone criticize it and
Oh
stuff
man.
like that. But
Dude, you gotta
yeah,
send me a
no,
link
it's
to that, 'cause that is genius.
oh yeah, I'll see if I can, because I feel like it might have gone down or they might have taken it down or something, but I'll see if it's still up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to look it up now, and it looks like there's a lot of imitators and shit like that, but
Oh
I
yeah,
don't know where the original one
now
is.
I'll just
No, it's all right.
oh,
What is it?
bloody
Sorry. What I was gonna say
huh.
is that one thing before we actually move on to what this actual show is about. Basically, for those who aren't up with gaming, I'm really sorry that you have endured the last two, I guess it gets the last two episodes so far.
Well, we
But
talk about gaming quite a lot, so if
I know,
you
but
can't really
it's
like, well, we talk about, popular culture and like media in that sense. So if you're not into that, like, and I really don't know many people who are into films enough to listen to a podcast about making up an improvised film and aren't into video games.
Yeah, well, no, that's very good. That's a very good point. And what I actually really wanted to talk about was something that I discovered this morning was do you know who Anita Sarkeesian is?
No.
Okay, so mid to late last, well, I think it was very mid last year, there was a woman by the name of Anita Sarkeesian, and she'd actually been doing a show called Feminist Frequency. Don't chime in yet, then. She's sort of doing different videos on different parts of pop culture and sort of feminist takes on those sort of pieces of pop culture. Like she reviewed The Hunger Games, she reviewed Lego of all things, and one of her big things was she would sort of focus on video games. And I heard about her briefly. I had friends sort of show me videos of her stuff, and I was like, okay, well, she brings up some interesting points, but I really don't think she's being objective about it. Like I understand that there is, usually a less objective view for people who are very strong feminists and stuff like that, and that's unfortunate in a way because it doesn't promote a strong discussion. It doesn't create, any new ideas. It just kind of pushes a along an agenda that is usually has some kind of. From what I feel is that when I've talked to certain feminists, there is a certain personal side to it that is just like, okay, well, this happened to you, and that's unfortunate, and I understand why you're a feminist, but it doesn't have to rule your life. Like you can still be a person and have, different feelings about stuff and, still be a woman. Like it's not about being a woman and saying that things need to be this way. It's about being a human being and say things shouldn't be this way and that, things should be better. It's not about just pushing, your agenda and stuff. Anyway.
Well, anyone who has an agenda needs to really take note of that. It's like the fact
Yeah,
that,
or at least be
you of course, believe in things or like, have a stance on important issues and stuff like that, but still live your life.
For fuck's
Like,
sake.
and don't let it come before things or anything like that. Like anyone who has a child and lets their agenda
Okay,
rule
where
the
are you
way
going
they
with this?
raise that child is like I will never listen to that person's opinion. Like anyone who doesn't let their kid sit through sex ed because they're a religious household or stuff
Oh,
like that. Like, things like that. Or like, I remember there were times when during primary school and things like that, kids would get taken out of class during drug education.
I
and
know, and
whatnot.
that's ridiculous.
It is completely, and it inspires and creates more ignorance. And it's really just like you're not helping anyone. You're not even helping your own agenda because you're coming in the way of education. Education is really the key to having a better society, having a better community, having a better, just mankind, really. It's just like, we're not going to get anywhere by saying, no, this 2,000-year-old your old book is gonna give us the way forward. And well, it's kind of turned into religious criticism, but I don't know. It's the same with it's the same with feminists. It's the same with chauvinists. It's the same with anyone who's pro-drug, anti-drug, a capitalist, a communist, anything like that. If you're gonna have this overriding bias in the way that you live your life, it's not gonna affect you that positively,
Anyway, back to that story about Anita Sarkeesian. She was so she was doing these videos for quite a while, and she wanted to sort of focus on video games during her university days. She had actually written I believe it was a quite a long paper about video games and about the sort of place of women in video games, et cetera, et
Is this the
cetera.
woman that did that scam thing?
It wasn't a scam per se, but she
Well,
basically
at the
went on.
moment, it looks like a scam.
Let me finish. She basically went on Kickstarter, which is the great crowdfunding website, and she asked for $6,000 to basically create a new version of a series that she'd done previously called Tropes vs. Women in Video Games. Basically, it would be a 5-part series that would basically look at different parts of video games and the, reoccurring and partially negative stereotypes that, characters, happen to be perceived by, mainly female characters, obviously. And I thought, that's good. That's a good thing. Like, I don't agree with what she says from time to time, and, maybe creating a discussion about this is a great thing. And then I started to watch her other videos, and there was one that she did on Kanye West's Monster, which was from the My Dark Twisted Fantasy album, and she was so negative about it. And I don't just mean from just a feminist standpoint. Like, there are some very disturbing things in the music video. I'm not going to move away from that. However, the music video itself is a comment on the way that Hollywood and, the rap game itself portrays women, as pieces of meat, even to a literal point where women are being hacked up and turned into pieces of meat. But she was so negative about it, saying that people should not watch the video, should not share the video, basically boycott Mr. West's music, and basically just decry the video as complete misogyny and just ignorance of how.
Wait, you just called him Mr. West.
Mr. West! Mr. West!
I haven't heard anyone ever refer to Kanye like that before. That is, it sounds weird. Like he's not a Mister. He's Kanye.
It was a reference to at the beginning of one of his songs that he has Bernie Mac do a skit, and it ends with him just like, "Wake up, Mr. West!" R.I.P. Bernie Mac. But basically, so yeah, she asked for $6,000. She got that $6,000, and unfortunately, there was a very negative sexist backlash from certain gamers, mainly who started upon different sort of web cultures, namely 4chan was one of them, very obviously, and they were against what she was doing, and I thought that. They shouldn't be against her because she's a woman. They should be against her because of her ignorant views to some degree and her lack of research. Like that's the issue that I constantly have with Miss Sarkeesian. Anyway, she got funded and she got over $150,000 to make a 6-part, sorry, a 5-part internet video series. And she said, and I do quote, that the delivery for the first video was meant to be in August of 2012. It is now March of 2013. And the first video came out today,
Oh, it actually came out.
and I watched every single minute of the 23-minute video, and I have to say 70% of it is bullshit.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to watch because she has such a flat delivery, and she's often smug at times. Like she I think a part of the video series, and I think she stated it during her Kickstarter video, that it was to educate people who, may not have too big a grasp on video games as a culture. And this was kind of like, their sort of first step into that. Like, if they were studying feminism, they wanted to look at video games, this was sort of their first step into it. The problem is that she has this very, very smug delivery at times. Like, she's winking at the audience about, something that she's teasing up to about video games that is often very common. Like, she's talking about the progression of Mario and, his damsels in distress, and their characterization. And that's fine if she was just talking about sorry, just not just talking about, but just talking to, you know, the people who would eventually watch it. However, there are many points she brings up that are either somewhat out of context. Like the first point she brings up was during the generation of the sixth console generation, there was the GameCube, and one of the things that was early in development was a game. A Star Fox game, because you know, Star Fox, you know, was very prevalent during Super Nintendo. He had a great game on N64. And eventually had a really, really poor game come out during the GameCube era. And how that originally started was a great little game called Dinosaur Planet, with a character called Crystal, and, you know, she was the protagonist of the game. However, Anita kind of points out the fact that, you know, they Shigeru Miyamoto made a joke that, yeah, it should be a Star Fox game, and then they spent... Her exact words, they spent 2 years crafting it into a Star Fox game, and I was like, okay, there are so many other factors that she's not taking into account, like game design, and also business relations, and also the history of Star Fox. Like, I highly doubt that they, at the time of, you know, Star Fox Adventures release, that an original IP about a female protagonist, you know, on a dinosaur planet would have sold too well, especially with the name Dinosaur Planet. Would you play a game called Dinosaur Planet?
What was their creative team being paid to do exactly?
I don't know. The game was actually in development for at least a year when Dinosaur Planet, the first, she shows a video of Dinosaur Planet. I think it was a video that at EA, I could be quite wrong about this, where they had, the game actually looks really good. The game looks really good, and the protagonist is Crystal, who would later actually turn up in Star Fox Adventures as a damsel in distress. Now, the point that she makes in the video itself is the fact that the transformation from Fox McCloud as the protagonist over Crystal is a negative thing. And I think the only negative thing that really came out of Star Fox Adventures, you know, from my experience, was the fact that Star Fox Adventures is just a fucking terrible fucking game. And also, Fox was established as, you know, a hero and as a character in previous games. Like, it's not like they just replaced her, like, replaced Crystal entirely with a male protagonist. It was the fact that he already had, you know, an established, you know, storyline and stuff like that. And there were so many things she doesn't take into account until later in the video, like, you know, just sort of, like, where Damsel in Distress comes from. Like she talks about that, but she talks about it, you know, in very plain senses. She doesn't talk about the fact that sort of the evolution of the Damsel in Distress isn't sort of something of, like, it's been getting worse. It's just a trope that's been put into different mediums. It's not like it's been, you know, like you know, characters are being, you know, female characters are being raped, and then, you know, that's their whole thing about them being a character. They're being raped, and then the hero must save them. They're usually just captured, and that's it. And the real sort of problem lies with the writers and the creators of those games. It's sort of anti-feminist.
It's the writers and the creators that are at fault. Like with your example earlier about a Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah.
Chances are there was some business executive that was just like, wait a second. Like, I don't know. There was a long period where video gamers were, you know, well, at least the companies saw them as being exclusively male. And there was definitely that that image in popular culture and amongst society that, you know, that gamers were nerdy, isolated, kind of pimply, fat guys that were, like, you know, and, like, the odd girl that would be playing video games were usually married to one of these pimply guys. Like, yeah. You know, it's there was very much that kind of trend at that point. So the reason, I wouldn't, like, it's definitely a sexist agenda that stopped the game from being developed, but it's probably, like, I don't know, we probably should blame the market more than, like, the game developers or the franchise or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, see, this is my problem with talking about sexism in video games.
Yeah.
It's just, like, where does the problem actually lie? Does it lie with the female gamers for not being vocal enough? Does it lie with the male gamers for being too vocal? Does it lie with the production companies that actually have these business models and these money-making methods that they're trying to stick to? Or does it lie with the with all of us? Like, you know,
yeah, yeah.
It's probably the end. It's probably, you know, D.
Yeah, yeah, and it does rely on all of us because there's so many sort of dichotomies that cross over and that people have sort of a problem with sort of discussing. But there's one thing that the whole thing about Dinosaur Planet literally being the first thing she brings up and then never brings up again is the fact that there was a character that she didn't even refer to called Saber. Now, Saber, from all intents and purposes, looks like a very male character. And it was Saber and Crystal who were both you know, a part of it. And he was like the son of a wizard named Random, and both of them were actually a part of the game. But like the whole sort of thing, like yes, Crystal was a female protagonist, and you do play as her in Dinosaur Planet, but Dinosaur Planet was never made for multiple reasons, and I feel like it's just I really disagree with her on a lot of levels, and it's just frustrating, and I'm worried that, you know, it's like just because of her thing's called Feminist Frequency, it's like, oh, am I anti-feminist, am I like, you know, do I hate women and stuff like that, and then I have to reassure myself like, no, I don't, I
yeah,
love women.
Well, th- that's a major issue with this with feminism, and like what I was talking about with the biased agenda thing earlier. Like, it's just, you know, just because you don't completely agree with the absolute extremes of these movements doesn't make you anti that movement. Like, you know, and that's what I'd say the American political scene would want you to believe. Like, you know, if you're not red, you're blue and stuff like that. And, you know, that kind of thing pops up all over the place, but it's basically just it's a way for people to bully you into following them and listening to them. I don't know. When you have such a severe opinion about something, then you're always like going to want everyone else to listen to you and everyone else to think, oh, this is the smartest person in the room. I need to listen to them. I need to follow them. Thank you, New Messiah, for showing me the way.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So that's why I try not to subscribe to a lot of these things. Like, I'm not going to watch a single one of these ladies' videos because I can.
I think you should watch it just to see what it's like.
Myself. Sorry?
I think you should watch it just to see what it's like to sort of get a grasp on, like, what sort of...
No, because everything I don't think that, like, you know, personally, I can look at video games and say, okay, we have an issue with sex and the representation of the female gender and all that kind of stuff. So I can see that, I can acknowledge that, and I can go along on my happy day. I don't need some opinionated kind of, you know, woman shoving her, you know, often unresearched opinion down my throat. Like, it's not going to be helpful, and it'll probably make me angry. And if you are, and the problem is, like, when you deal with these kind of extremists, like, you know, it's just like no one ends up winning in the end. Like, you know, to use an analogy, with the Westboro Baptist Church, they're an extremist Christian organization,
yes.
And they give a bad image to the rest of the Christians and all that kind of stuff. And so in the end, there's a lot of people out there who have animosity towards this entire community of people who, by their own rights, might be lovely, loving people, but because of the Westboro, like, because these one bad egg, or this one group of people who are real scumbags, you know, they just have a completely bad kind of image. And it's the same with, it's the same with feminists. You know, there was a long period where people would only listen to Jermaine Greer. And, you know, I remember there was, like, there was a long time when Jermaine Greer is a cunt was, you know, the catch cry of the chauvinist kind of, or the male stance on feminism and stuff like that. It wasn't, you know, oh, feminism is bad or you know, females, you know, are in their place or anything like that. It was just Jermaine Greer is a cunt, you know, it's just like things like that. And that's not me saying that I ascribe to that opinion by any means. Don't soundbite me just saying that saying what I just said, even though. But anyway, it's just like, you know, and so I don't really want to watch this video series because I don't think it'll be helpful for me. Personally, it won't be helpful for me because I already realize the problems that exist. Like, you know, with Tomb Raider, like the most popular one of the most popular female protagonists in video games, she's most popular for the size of her cup, for her, you know, bra size. Like, you know, that's what she's most popular for. And, you know, the list goes on in with examples like that.
I was going to say that that's very true. However, just looking at the most recent Tomb Raider game, I am more than fucking enthralled to play that.
I'm definitely looking forward.
It looks... It just came out.
I was never much of a Tomb Raider fan.
No, neither, but this new one looks
awesome. I'll definitely give it a try.
This new one looks awesome and not as linear as I thought it was going to be, and it looks like fun and actually enjoyable and shit. Like, I had so many issues with the original Tomb Raider games because I didn't like the puzzling, I didn't like the way that she constantly died, I didn't like the way that, you know, she was sort of a character that I felt didn't have that much depth, but the thing I hated most about it was the controls and the linearity that sort of, I'd see friends playing it and stuff like that, and I was like, I mean, it's good because, you know, there is a female protagonist but it's not good because I don't think she's that well written. Like, I, before I had started actually looking at the most recent Tomb Raider, the only thing I knew about Lara Croft from watching the movies and playing a few of the games was that she was British, she has a mansion, she likes to go around the world and find stuff. Like, it, there's no real backstory. Like, apparently, like, there's this whole Croft legacy and stuff like that that they actually explore in the new game, and I'm like, I care about that. I actually want to, like, read about that and listen to it, and goddamn. And you know the best thing about that is? Written by a woman who wrote Mirror's Edge, which I actually thought was a pretty fun game to some degree, but I didn't really like the story that much.
I don't know. My problem with Mirror's Edge was it was way too linear. Like, I wanted a sandbox Mirror's Edge, but I got a single path that I could run along, and that's what, you know, turned me away from that game.
And you know what? There's never ever gonna be a Mirror's Edge 2 or a good Mirror's Edge 2. And you know why?
Why?
Because it's made by EA. Full circle.
Oh.
let's actually do something with our namesake and let's pitch something.
Let's do some pitching.
Let's
so
do
backroom
pitching.
We're doing something a little different this week, aren't we, Harry?
Yes, we are. In the previous weeks, we've decided that you know, we wanted to do films stuff like that because, you know, Ben is an aspiring filmmaker, and you know, I'm writing scripts and stuff like that. And I totally forgot that I was going to mention something in the last episode, but now I'm not even going to bother.
Well, you can't say that and just leave it there. Now I'm curious.
Okay. Well, I touched on it very briefly, but a friend and I are actually writing a game together. And I've actually sort of started to work in different interactive fictions because I really want to. One, I want to actually, like, work on something that I can add to my portfolio, but I actually really want to go through the game design experience. Like, I'm working on, like, a very, very limited platform and with a very limited engine, but really it's about me crafting a story and actually creating, you know, something that I can write and that I can actually enjoy. And I've actually been looking at some amazing books. Like, one of them I want to give a shout-out to by Jim Thompson, actually called Game Design Principles, Practices, and Techniques, which I've been absolutely loving. There is so much in there that I just actually never knew before. And there's another game book that I don't actually have with me at the moment because I think I may have left it at Howard's, called Better Character Design Through... Sorry, Better... I can't remember. It's... sorry. Yes, no, here it is. I found it. Better Character... Sorry, Better Game Characters by Design... written, oh, look at that, by a lovely, wait, was it a lovely woman? Let me see, let me find, sorry, by Catherine Abista, and it's just been absolutely awesome to read, and there's, like, a foreword by Tim Schafer, and it's just a fascinating read in terms of, like, the psychology of characters and how to write into that psychology, and all of just sort of these sort of overlapping and contrasting things, and I've just been doing so much planning just for this, like, little game and stuff like that, and I absolutely love it. And just writing the dialogue trees has been an immense amount of fun. And I hope to have it out by the end of the year, but I'll keep you posted. And I really want you to play it, like, you as a person, Ben, and also for our people who listen.
Well, Harry, I actually hate you, so I'm not going to go anywhere near it.
Okay, fine. All right. So anyway, what we wanted to do this week was something different where we were going to pitch a TV show to you. Because, you know, because I feel like you and I both watch more television than film.
Well, it varies week to week. Like, I go through different moods. Like, it really depends on the time of year.
Yeah.
Like during summer, I find myself playing a lot more games because I'm much more active. But during winter, you know, I'll definitely be rugging up and watching a lot more films and TV shows. But at this point, I've kind of run dry with TV shows to watch. Like, I watched all the way through Bob's Burgers and Workaholics last week, and now I'm just looking for a new comedy to fill that niche.
Well, you should look at some old TV series. Like, have you ever heard of Sledgehammer?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Okay, yeah, look up Sledgehammer. After all of this, you should really look it up. It's a great TV series by. A very, very funny guy, and he's actually just got a new series called Bullet to the Head, which is a Canadian show about a detective that stars Eddie Izzard. But start with Sledgehammer first.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, okay, so basically we wanted to pitch a show this week, and that I came up with, and I feel like you're going to love it from the get-go. There's no producers this week. It's just me and Ben, and we're gonna give you the whole first episode of what basically I'm gonna call Courtney Adjourned.
Courtney Adjourned.
Courtney Adjourned.
So instead of this week, instead of backroom pitching, this can be a backroom writing.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean we're still pitching the show at you.
Oh, but still, well, technically we're writing the first episode. Like this, well, I don't know, just for gimmick's sake, we can say that we're taking you into the writer's room instead of the pitching room for once, because there's no producer.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because producers can sometimes ruin things and sometimes make things great. Okay, so
Especially in TV.
especially in television. So all right, so right now we're gonna show, it's called Courtney Adjourned, basically from the creators of some great hit movies, such as Advertisers Beware and Tweaker's Island.
Can I just say, I listened to Tweaker's Island like a couple of days after it went up. I really enjoyed it. Like I had a lot of fun listening to that, because it really did just like it didn't go for long at all, and it was just ridiculous.
I have different feelings about it. I think
Yeah.
it's a great exploitation film. I don't think it's a great movie. But we'll see.
Well, that I know. I think being a great exploitation film makes you a great movie, but opinions can vary
Oh,
there.
that's very true. That's me being biased. Anyway, here we go. So we're gonna talk about the fact that we're gonna push forward for Courtney Adjourned. It's a show. It's a TV show. Do we want it to be? Let's say it's an hour. It's an hour long show.
Oh, I reckon go for like the hour long, but we'll go for a 40-minute runtime rather than an hour runtime, because we'll put this on I don't know, NBC or something rather than HBO.
Yeah, this isn't like yeah, overly sexy, overly violent affair that you see on them cable networks, on your Netflix, on your internet. This is just, a really great little, dramedy. I think that's what they're called.
Yeah.
Like Scrubs. Scrubs was a dramedy.
I'd say Boston Legal would probably fit the bill more.
Or MASH.
Yeah, definitely MASH.
And it's about a lovely young protagonist called Courtney Braithwaite, and Courtney Braithwaite is, she just graduated from Harvard. She's on the top of her game, and but she's about to go into the wonderful world of law, and maybe not order. Maybe she's got a lot of disorder in her life. And basically, the show is about, her rise through the ranks. But let's go with the first episode. In the first episode, fade in, and Courtney's walking down the street, and she's in a very, very plain outfit. She's just got a shirt, and maybe she's just got some shoes on and some shorts, and she's got her hair up in a ponytail, and she's got a Jamba Juice, and she's just walking down the street, and she's just having a great day. She's just enjoying her life. And her opening monologue begins, and she's just saying that California is different from every other state. It's the only state that you can get a Jamba Juice in and just enjoy yourself for a whole day. I can't think of any other place in the US that's exactly like that. Maybe it's because we have so many Jamba Juices here. And she's actually on the way to see her friend when a car comes, like she's about to cross the road, and a car comes out of nowhere and skids around the corner and smashes like against a light pole. And then another car just rams right into the back of that. And this whole sort of car pileup starts, and Courtney just drops her Jamba Juice, and she runs over to help, and she screams out into, the street, is there a doctor here? Is there a doctor here? Is anybody here that's a doctor?
A man emerges from the wreck of the car. Blood is streaming down his head. He's very groggy, and you can't tell whether he was drunk beforehand or if he's just concussed right now. But he's kind of stumbling. He's like, "I'm a doctor."
So it's like, sir, and Courtney's like, sir, you need to sit down, sir, please
"But
sit down.
I'm a doctor. I can help people."
No, and she sort of helps him to the edge of his car, and he kind of just sort of slides down the sort of the back window, and he kind of falls to the ground. It's like, is anybody else a doctor? And she calls back,
So
and
she
she.
goes running around the streets. She's looking around and stuff like that. But she thinks, "Okay, I should actually attend to the wounded." So she goes back and she drags the other body from the out of the car. And
Yeah,
she
yeah.
just he's laying on the road. He's unconscious, but the doctor, he's vanished.
Yeah, the doctor's gone,
Yeah.
and then sort of the other people sort of are in that she goes to the other cars, and she sort of, there's a lot of chaos and confusion, And then she sort of looks out, and there's like a guy, you know, he's sort of running over, and he's like, "Are you a doctor?" And he's like, "No, but I just want to help. I want to do something. I know first aid." And so she, you know, she asks him like, "I think you should keep pressure on this wound right here." And you know, he like pats it down, and the guy screams out in pain. And it's like, okay, maybe not there. And the guy's like, "Oh God, what happened? Why am I in so much pain?" And she just sort of reassures him like, "It's okay. You know, are you okay? Like, what happened?" And he's like, I need a doctor, I need a doctor. And he, and she's like, "No, you need a lawyer." And then we cut to
Cut to the title sequence, and
the title.
I know I was just spending that time trying to find an appropriate song for the title sequence, but I can't.
Oh, you're
So let's make one up.
no,
A
it's
do 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 do. Cutney adjourned.
it's a Courtney adjourned. You're in the court, and it's gonna be adjourned with court.
Do 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 do. Flashback of all the pretty people turning really dramatically.
Yeah, and like different cases that she takes over the series, and like, you know, one of them like there's a tiger in a cage, like, you know, on the witness stand, you know, and
One
that's
is banging on the table, really in anger and frustration.
yeah, there's another one where like her lawyer, who like not her lawyer, but the person who owns a firm, which is, you know, played by John Benjamin, you know, in a very, very bad toupee. Like, the toupee is intentionally bad because, you know, he's overly honest with his clients, but he's never honest with himself. Like, that's where he's conflicted. And you know, he's sort of talking, you know, with somebody, and then they're laughing, and then there's like a, you know,
Then
the.
there's a real slow motion shot of Courtney as she flicks a single tear away from her eye to show you that she has emotional side, but then the tear flies off and turns into the writing, Courtney adjourned.
Adjourned, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it sort of has her, you know, just like it like it has Courtney adjourned, and then like a close up of her legs and her feet as they sort of come off, like come on screen, and like a heel breaks, and then it says comes up with created by Benjamin Sevenchuk and Harrison Engstrom, because we want our names on this.
I think we kind of just did, but
Okay, so then we sort of cut back to you know, to Courtney, and she enters the office, and you know, she's got a new Jamba Juice, and it's full, and she looks really flustered, and there's like blood on her, you know, her white shirt, and John Benjamin, you know, reaches her, and he's like, oh, Courtney, what happened? You're covered in strawberry, and she's like, "It's not strawberry, it's blood." And I'm like, "Oh God, that's even worse. What happened? Did they get the order wrong at Jamba Juice?" And he kind of laughs, like, "No, somebody nearly died on the way to work." And I'm like, and it's like,
Did you get my order from Jamba Juice?
and she kind of pauses, and she's like, "I didn't know you had an order." I'm like, "Well, I thought that maybe you'd get me something. You know what I like." And
And I did call you after all. It was a pretty important call, and you didn't pick it up. So not a good first week, Courtney. Not a good first week.
then it was like, wah, wah, wah.
Wow.
And then it cuts to her going into her office, and she sort of, you know, sits down, and she's sort of flustered and stuff like that, and then she opens a drawer, like her bottom drawer, and even though she's only been there 2 days, you know, she's got things sorted out. She knows how everything's sort of going.
She's well organized on the surface, so her office looks immaculate, but in her drawers there's chaos.
Yeah, there's like chaos. There's like, you know, like it's just like full of like chocolate and gum. Like, just one particular drawer, she opens up like the first drawer, it's like pens. The second drawer is all like gum, and then she opens like the big bottom drawer, and
And it's got liquor and guns.
it's got li yes. All right, let's go with that. It's got liquor and guns, and then she sort of leans back, and then she sort of thinks about what happens. Like, huh? I knew I should have gotten the boss a Jamba Juice, but you know.
And then into her office walks the doctor from before.
The one with the head wound?
Yeah, and he's patched up, but it's a pretty shitty job.
The very same. So basically, you know, he walks in, and you know, he's got like the bandage around his head, and he's played by Josh Hutcherson, who, you know, some people might remember from the awful Hunger Games movie. And he sort of comes in, and he's just like, "Ugh, I wanted to thank you. I never got your name." And then he's
But
just like,
the fact was that he actually ran from the scene of the crime, so
Yeah.
he's nervous at the moment because he doesn't know he can't remember the crime. He
No,
was
no.
in the first car to hit the pole, not the car that hit his car, so he's not sure who's at fault or what's going on.
Yeah.
But we don't know the story. Why were these two cars driving so recklessly?
She's like, God, are you okay? What's wrong? Did you get to a hospital? And he's like, I got to my doctor. My doctor's really good. And she's like, well, what happened? Do you remember anything? He's like, and then it cuts to like a flashback where it's like, I was driving along the street and everything was kind of just being good. And I felt like it was a good day. And Train was on the radio because I really like Train. And, you know, and then it like has him like singing Drops of Jupiter. And it's like, and he's just like, and it's like the best soy latte that you ever had, and me. And then he starts to lose
But then this
control.
guy gets he gets cut off. This other car just like swipes in front of him and almost takes him out.
Yeah, and that's when you then that's when we cut to like the footage from before, because you know it's expensive. We already have a car crash in this fucking episode already, and he slides, slams right into the pole, and it cuts back to him, and he actually jolts out of his seat from just the memory, and she's just like, oh, I it's like I what. Do you remember, anything different from your usual commute or anything like that? And he's like, well, I don't remember who I am. And then it's like, ba-bow! And then that's our first act break.
But he could remember that he was a doctor.
You remember he was a doctor. But that's, well, that's where we'll get to that. I've got this planned out. Don't worry about it.
Oh, good, good.
Okay, so then we sort of cut back to basically, Courtney's, sort of talking with John Benjamin, and sort of, it's probably like an hour or two later, and John's like, oh, it's I wasn't, and like he was sort of explaining by the fact that, a man with a head wound just walked into our office, like, I'm not going to argue with a man with a head wound, Courtney. Do you know how dangerous that is? Do you want to get sued? Without, us suing each other. But anyway, the point is, I didn't want to have to say no to a guy with a head wound. She's like, no, I get that, Bernie. His name's Bernie. Let's just call him Bernie from now on. I
Just
get
call
that.
him John Benjamin
We
so he
just
remembers.
John Benjamin. I don't want to talk about John Benjamin. And then, it's just like, but it's, like, how can you remember that he was a doctor, but he can't remember what his name is? Like, well, there's a lot of things I don't remember, but I remember my name, John Benjamin. Like, but, instead of John Benjamin, we put his real name in place there. But he's just like, it just seems so weird. I mean, it's like, well, you're not a cop, Courtney. You just got to get the cases done. She's like, I know, but I need to
But
gather
it
evidence. And then it cuts to her, calling some people and talking to the head wound guy again. And then she reviews like a different bits of footage, and like she finds like one of those traffic light footage cams that apparently exist, and she's looking at it and she's reviewing the tape, and she notices that he's singing along to Train, but there's somebody who's in the car next to him, and like he throws that the person in the car next to him like throws something through the back window, and it's not it's like, oh, who is that guy? And it's like, huh, those are Los Angeles plates. I could probably call my friend at the DMV. And then she calls his friend at the DMV. And then we cut to, who's somebody young and male and famous? Let's say that.
Go Zach Braff. He hasn't had work
Yeah,
lately.
Zach Braff. Zach Braff. It's on NBC, right? They can get Zach Braff.
Yeah.
There's Zach Braff. Zach Braff, or the guy who played his brother in Scrubs and was also in the show Ed. I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, it'll come to me. It's like Tom something,
Yeah.
Tom Cavey or Cavorn, something like that. Anyway, so basically he he's like, he picks up the phone and he says something witty like, Dave's tow truck service, you lose them, we fuse them, something ridiculous like that. And it's like, he picks up the phone and it's like, hey, it's Courtney, and he gets really excited because he has like a crush on her, and that's kind of like he's gonna be his arc, like he's gonna crush her and something like that, and he wants to sort of make things right before the end of the first season, and that's where we leave sort of our cliffhanger is that they actually have their first date at the end of the first season. Everybody goes, oh,
But that's getting ahead of ourselves. We're still in the
sorry,
pilot.
pilot. Okay. And he like clears like shit off his desk and like he actually starts working. He's like, hey, Courtney, hey, what's going on? Yeah, what do you need? Well, what's going on? How was your day? And she's like, oh, I'm trying to solve a case. I need some help. It's like, yeah, well, what do you need to do? What do you need done? What are you doing later? And it's like, okay, I need the plates run. I need the plates run. BF7375. I don't know what the Los Angeles plates look like, but she would need to run Los Angeles plates. And it's like, and he's like, okay, huh. It looks like it's registered to an a guy, an old guy, And you know, it's you know, the guy's played by Ed O'Neill from Married with Children and Modern Family. They can probably get him. So yeah, so they get him, and she's like, I wonder what he does. And then you know, then we've got, you know, a sort of thing where, you know, she goes up to his house and he like lives in like this big like Hollywood mansion, like it's crazy, crazy big, and you know, he's got like these gates and stuff like that, and she sort of buzzes and she kind of puts on like a Spanish accent and she's like, I'm here to do the housekeeping, and I'm not clean out,
but I'm so sleepy.
Oh my god.
Sorry, racist. Okay, let's reel that back.
Okay, so the gates open and you know, they let her in, and Courtney says, she's like, I know that we're a diverse culture, but I feel like, you know, Mexican people should, you know, be allowed, you know, to live and work in the United States, you know, to show that, you know, she's very open-minded as well. She, you know, she's sort of like the every woman, but, you know, again, she's a real woman because she's untidy and stuff like that.
She's a woman of the people.
Yeah. She's a woman of the people. So basically, yeah, she goes up to the house and, you know, she knocks on the door and stuff like that. And, basically, you know, she gets to the door and she's greeted by this very, you know, stuffy, mustached butler, played by, you know, some sort of nobody that everybody will fall in love with. And he'll hopefully get some great jobs and stuff like that. I was like, hello, who are you? You know, I thought the maid was coming. And she's like, oh, I'm here to drop off a package. I saw a maid come, but then she ran off. I guess she forgot something in her car. Ha ha, hee hee. And she's like, oh, who are you? And she's about to use like a real name. And then she's like, I'm Katie Kalin. I'm actually here to report on the Daily News. And I was just wondering, you know, we were doing, you know, something about the biggest and best mansions in Hollywood, and we wanted to know, you know, who's the owner of this place and what do they do, and you know who is the amazing butlers that keep their house and stuff. And he's like, well, I'm Alfred Winchester, and the owner of this house is Michael Leonis, and but we call him Mike for short because he's cool like that. He comes from the Leonis dynasty. And, you know, he
enjoys casual Fridays and Sundays.
Yeah, casual Fridays and Sundays and Mondays, if you get my drift. Anyway, he starts to sort of loosen up because, you know, he likes his job. He clearly gets paid well. It's like, oh, really? What does Mike do? And he's like, well, he's actually a medical professional, what you may call a specialist in his field. And he's like, oh, really? What kind? Like you know, nothing that big, just a brain surgeon. And they sort of have a laugh, and then they, you know, she's sort of going through the house, and she's just like, huh, there's a door down there that you know, is a little bit open, and maybe there's some weird light streaming through it. And she's like, oh, I'm really sorry, but, you know, I need the little girl's room. And it's like, ooh, it's down the hall, and it's the 12th door on the right. But don't go down the hall and go to the 4th door on the right. That's where we keep all the... And then he says something, Woody, I don't know. Like, they have a laugh or something.
I was like, okay, so Harry, we're about 10 minutes into this episode so far. I'd say more 15 to 20.
I'm getting to the...
Are we going to get to court soon?
No, here's the thing. Okay, yeah, so here's the thing. Because it's a 45-minute episode. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm getting to, like, the second act. And so, basically, like, as she's, like, snooping around, yeah, she finds, like, this room with all of, like, you know, these certificates of him being like an amazing neurosurgeon, stuff like that, and stuff like that. There's like different things on the walls, and you know, accolades and humanitarian awards. And then he sort of like she finds like this you know, big box of names, and he sort of starts searching through it. And then, you know, all of the names have pictures, and she finds one of them that actually looks like the doctor, and it says, you know, Mark Catherine's, and in, you know, he's, and it's like, oh, okay, so he's a patient of some kind, okay. And then the door creaks open, and Mike walks in, and he's like, oh, what are you doing in here? And it's just like, oh, I'm just here reporting on, you know, great mansions and stuff like that. And he's just like, huh, Great Mansions Weekly came last week. Oh, you must be a spy. You know, Alfred, get in here. And he's like, yes. And, you know, then they have like sort of and stuff like that. And then Corny is just like, you know, she's cornered. There's no exit. And so, like, there's a window behind her, and she opens the window, and she just climbs out, and she just escapes, and she just runs around the grounds, and then she gets in her car.
That's not exciting enough. She keeps the window closed and jumps straight through it, I reckon.
She jumps through the window?
Yeah, in a really dramatic kind of, like, you know, there's an explosion of glass stuff behind her as well.
Okay, and maybe she lands, like, on a, like one of those very, very well-trimmed hedges and stuff.
No. She just lands on the ground in, like, a commando roller. Yeah, and she, like, gets out, and she's like, whoa, whoa. Then she, like, you know, runs off.
Well, I feel like we're straying from, like, the realism of her being, like, the every woman here.
It's NBC, what realism?
All right, fine. Okay, so she jumps out the window, and, you know, the Mike has a gun on him, and he starts firing at her, and, you know, she dodges them, and then she...
And he also has landmines in his front lawn. So they start exploding as she runs past them.
Okay, all right, yeah. He's very protective of his property. I mean, that's why he's been featured in Great Mansions Weekly. So she makes all the way home. She makes it all the way to the car, and then she, like, runs back to her office, and then she's greeted by John Benjamin, and he's sort of working on some papers and stuff like that and filing some things. And he's like, well, looks like somebody's had two bad days in a row. Who knows that, you know, Tuesdays could turn out to be Mondays. You know, he's always, like, full of all this, like, you know, witty, you know, office repartee. And so basically, you know, and she's just like, huh, being a lawyer isn't as, it's all cracked up to be. And he's like, you're telling me. And he, you know, he shows his mug and there's, like, a crack in it. And basically it's just like, we need to get a warrant for this doctor. And John Benjamin's like, why? And it's just like, I think I know what happened. And, you know, and then she goes to, like, a hospital and goes to visit the guy again because, you know, he's decided to check into a hospital because he has a massive head wound. And they actually, he's just like, oh, I still don't remember my name. And he's like, your name's Mark. You've been a patient for this doctor for a while. But I'm really sorry to tell you, you're not a doctor. And then we ad break right there. Boom, ad break.
Oh no.
Yeah. So we're revealing more.
Do 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 do.
It's about this guy.
That's the ad break song thing.
Yeah. And then we come back and they're still in the hospital. And he's like, "What? How did I remember I was a doctor?" And she's just like, "Well, it appears that you're a medical student. You're not a doctor yet. You're working to be a doctor, but." I need you to take a look at this person and see if you remember them. And she pulls out photos of Dr. Michael. And, you know, he's just like, huh, he does feel familiar. Wait, I think I know who he is. Wait. Okay, so part of it's coming back. He was at my lecture last week. Okay, all right. And she starts sort of writing down notes. It's just like, yeah, he came in and he said that he was offering me something. I can't remember what. I think it may have been, it could have been a job. It could have been, like, a residency at his hospital. And she's like, uh-huh, okay. And he's just like, but then I remember that he visited me at home, and then it's a bit of a blur, and then I remember waking up here. What do you mean here? What do you mean, like, even at this hospital? Yeah, I've been in this hospital before. I've been in this exact room. And then he looks around the room, and he notices that all the other people around him also have head wounds. And then she's like, huh, could you just hold on a second? And then she starts to look at the charts for all of these different people, and you notice that they've all had different types of brain surgery on them. And then she's just like, you know, she starts asking all these different people with, like, head wounds and stuff like that. And then, you know, she asks, like, the doctors that are treating them, so just like, when were they all admitted? And it's like, oh, well, she talks to, you know, a black doctor, and it's like, you know, Dr. Nolan, and he's just like, well, you know, a few of them came in last week, you know, complaining of, you know, different things here and there, but a lot of them are, you know, just sort of fainters that, you know, that just happened to turn up. And she's just like, I wonder what's going on here. And then she starts looking at the previous medical records and stuff like that, and they notice that, like, they didn't have, like, you know, any sort of, you know, previous problems with, you know, blood loss or, you know, sort of traumas to the head or anything like that. It all just seems to be all these random experiences. And then it turns out, it turns out she's just like, oh my god, I've got it. I've got it. And then it cuts to sort of Mark, and he's sort of in the mirror, and he's sort of looking in the mirror, and, you know, he's just going to the bathroom or something like that, and he's washing his face, and he kind of sort of he accidentally sort of is like thinks about brushing his hair with like a comb, and he's sort of doing like the little bit of tuft of hair that he has at the top, you know, trying to get around the bandage, and he accidentally drops it in the bandage, and he sort of starts to feel back around there, and then it's kind of like this gross thing where, you know, I started to sort of notice there are a lot of shows that are sort of coming out now where they're kind of like pushing the bloody element, so I thought this is going to be a little bloody element, and he starts to sort of unravel the bandage, and, you know, there's like a, you know, like this little musical sting where it sounds like, you know, a violin being thrown like a metal shaft, where it's like, yeah, like that, and then he sort of, it's good, no, I mean, like it's...
Yeah, just creating some mood.
Yeah, like, and then it like it sort of starts to like pitch up, and he's just slowly unraveling, and you realize there's like this giant scar, you know, just below his hairline, and just underneath like where his hairline sort of stops at the end, and like there's this big shaved patch, and he sort of starts to freak out, and he touches it, and he starts to cry, and he touches the front, and then he's happy again, and he touches the back again, and he starts to cry again, and then he just falls to the ground, and he has like a seizure, and then we got another commercial break.
Dun-dun.
And it's like, yeah, and then we cut back, and then like Courtney's like running down the hallway hospital, and she's like, you know, and then she sort of opens the ward, and there's an empty bed, and then Dr. Nolan's there, and he's just like, I'm really sorry, Courtney, but we found him on the floor, and he'd had some kind of aneurysm. We're really sorry. And she's just like, no, I know it now. I know it all now. I know it. And I'm going to get this bastard for you. And for you, she starts pointing at all the patients. Like, for you and for you and for
what about me? No, no, you shit yourself too much. Not for you.
And she points at the empty bed. For him. I'm going to do it for him. And she sort of coughs.
And this is the clip where she wipes away a single tear from her eye, which is from the title sequence that, you know, the last shot before it turns into the title card.
Yeah. So basically, and then it cuts to her sort of talking to Tom Cavorn. I actually had a look of it during the ad break. Tom Cavorn or Zach Braff. And she's just like, I need you to do something. And he's just like, what? Anything. I want you to make this car, make this car stolen. And he's like, what? And she's like, you know what I mean. And he's just like, oh. And then it cuts to, Dr. Michaels being pulled over, and then him being arrested. And then like his car being swarmed by all of these other cars. And sort of then like saying, like, you know, like yelling at him, like, get out of the car, and like this and that, and they're like, and it's just like, I'm sorry, sir, but it appears that this car has been stolen, and that you've been considered a Colombian drug lord. And then it cuts back to Tom, and he's like laughing as he's typing all this in and stuff like that. And then it cuts to Courtney visiting him at the police station, and like there's this sort of, you know, very, very dark, witty sort of back and forth. And she's like, I know what you did, and I know everyone you've done it to, and we're gonna sue your ass. We're gonna sue you, not because you're rich, not because you've done something. Not because you're rich, not because you have a great car and a great life, but because you're an evil person. And obviously, I'm gonna word that better. But it's like that, the gist of it. I'm giving you the subtext. This is the subtext of what's happening in the scene. So then it cuts to like a courtroom, and then we sort of like lead up with the first courtroom scene, and then every single person sort of gives their testimony. But clearly, Dr. Michaels has like thought about this. And, you know, they've sort of, you know, done all of these things and stuff like that, that they can't remember. They can't remember who he is. Like, you know, that Mark was like, you know, the only person, you know, out of the whole bunch that actually, you know, was, you know, slowly starting to reveal things and start to know things. And then they call a surprise witness, and they actually call in, another neurosurgeon. And they said that, you know, we had a look at the autopsy for Mark's brain, and we found something horrible. And that's when That's when.
Another ad break. Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was pointing out too. And then it cuts back, and then it cuts to Michael's whispering. Sorry, Dr. Michael's whispering something to his lawyer, and it's my client has suggested a recess, and the judge is very, very, you know, stern. He's a you know, sort of strong.
He's by the book. His major priority is to uphold the laws, not force his own opinions. Yeah. You know.
I'll allow it. Like he's kind of got this sort of slightly southern drawl and stuff. I was like, I'll allow it. And so basically, they cut to like a recess, and Courtney's like, oh my god, like we just about to get a testimony and stuff like that. And then it cuts to like Dr. Michael sort of talking with this lawyer, and it's just like the end of the conversation, because Courtney like walks out. Of the courtroom and into the room where like they're having that discussion, and she's like, I'm on to you. I know what you're gonna say. You're gonna try and counteract his statements because you're a better neurosurgeon than he is. And Dr. Michael's like, Courtney, I'm not a better neurosurgeon. I'm a better liar. And he just walks. He put like bumps straight past her and walks out straight into the courtroom.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so basically, you know, the lawyer's just like, the neurosurgeon gives his testimony saying that, you know, it's looking from the autopsy, like, parts of the brain were missing and reconnected and re-sutured up. So, like, there's been sort of dabbling here. And so the lawyer sort of does a cross-examination. Now, is there any way to prove that Dr. Michael's actually done that? And the doctor opens his mouth and you see the jury lean in, and he's just like, no, sadly not. There's no possibility. And Courtney just sort of looks flustered and just says that. And they sort of have a, like, the doctor steps down. Oh my god, I keep sort of getting confused between doctors and lawyers. I know that.
Oh, there's too many doctors and lawyers in this episode at the moment. That's why.
Yeah.
It's like an ER Boston Legal crossover.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the best thing about the show, is like we've got both of those demographics, and they're both circled around and stuff like that.
It's like the formulaic TV super show.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's better than doctors? Lawyers. But what's better than lawyers? Doctors. Duh. But...
exactly. And when you put them both in the mix, it's just like, it's ratings gold. Anyway, let's wrap this mother up.
Okay, yeah, so basically, like, Courtney's like, oh god, how am I going to do this? How am I going to get out of this? And then she starts, she's like, I'd like to ask Dr. Michaels to the stand, and the lawyer sort of is like, objection, and then, like, Dr. Michaels is like, no, I'll allow it. And then the judge is like, that's my line. And everybody kind of laughs and stuff like that, but then gets himself together, and, you know, he puts himself together, and he gets up onto the witness stand, and Courtney's like, Dr. Michaels, how long have you been practicing? He's like, well, I've been practicing for at least 3 decades. It's like, 3 decades, that's good. And how long have you sort of been, you know, did you always want to be a doctor? And she's like, well, you know, I always wanted to be a doctor. I always wanted to help people. Now, helping people, that's your expertise, isn't it? Well, that's exactly what I just said. But helping people is what you want to do most, what you think is best. Well, yeah, of course I think it's best. So, say somebody, you know, couldn't help themselves, you'd step in and make sure that, you know, they could help them. Sorry, that you could help them. Well, you know, I do what I can. I, you know, I try to find the best in people, and I try to make sure that the best is done. Like, yeah, but you wouldn't go to extreme lengths to do stuff. Well, you know, it depends on what you mean by extreme lengths. Well, you know, you wouldn't do anything that would be unethical as a doctor. It's like, well, you know, I've taken a Hippocratic oath. And it's like, well, you know, somebody was a medical student and, you know, they weren't doing the best in their course, and you kind of saw that they weren't doing the best, and, you know, you wouldn't weed them out. Like, well, no, I'd hope that, you know, somebody could lecture them, somebody could make them, you know, achieve their best. But would you want them to achieve their best? Well, yes, of course I'd want them to achieve their best. That's exactly what I just said. That is exactly what you just said. Now, you also said during one of your lectures, and I do quote from the video that was given to me by the University of Southern California, that where you gave some guest lectures, that you found that the idea of neurosurgery to be one that was, you know, affable and formidable. Well, yes, I think that maybe not everybody's cut out for brain surgery, but the best people are. It's like, yes, the best, of course the best. But you also said that maybe not the best and brightest are doing the work in the field. Like, well, I mean, that's a very subjective opinion, but I think that's the case. Like, do you think Mark was a great person? Well, I mean, it's a tragedy that he is dead, but I did think he was a great person. He was a good person. Was he a great student? Well, I mean, that's more of his lecturers to decide. Was he a great student? You should answer the question, Dr. Michaels. And she like looks to the judge, and he's just like, the witness the witness should answer the question. In my opinion, I did not think he was doing his best. And what would he be doing if he was doing his best? If he did his best, he would. And Courtney's got him on the ropes, and she knows it, and she's got this little twinkle in her eye, and she looks at the jury and then looks back at Dr. Michaels, like, he would what, Dr. Michaels? He would have done his best in the end. Like, well, yes, that's true. I mean, but you know, it's a shame that he was stricken with this illness. Now he can never achieve his best. And like, well, maybe, if he was a better student, he could have achieved better. Yeah, but he's not a student anymore. It's like, well, he never would have been a doctor either. And he, like, everybody's like, oh, I was like, no, why
Oh.
do you think that is? Why would he wouldn't have been a doctor? Because he wasn't a good student. So you think that good students make good doctors? Yes, I was a great student. I was an amazing student. I was the best student there ever is, and I'm now the best doctor in the world. And everybody should know that. And you should know that. And Mark should have let every shouldn't have let me inter shouldn't have interfered with my work, and should have just let me work on his brain like I did with all those other people. And everyone's like, oh my God. Well, I don't think anybody has anything further for this witness. And she walks away slowly from the stand and sits down. And then it cuts to him being taken out, and being rearrested again and put into the car, and it's just like,
And now there's just her and John Benjamin standing outside the courthouse watching this happen.
yeah, it's just like,
It's time for the final cap, the final wrap-up.
yeah, and it's them both sort of standing on the steps, and it's just like, well, you did good this week, Courtney, especially for your first week. I mean, you put yourself out there, you found your cases, and you solved them like you did, like it was nobody's business. It's like, well, it wasn't my business. It was the business that I had to do. And then he's sort of like, well, I think we had a good week. And he's just like, yeah. It's like, well, see you on Monday. And don't forget my Jamba Juice. And she's just like, oh, I won't. And then she pulls out two cups of Jamba Juice and gives him one. And then just like, ah, full circle.
And it freeze frames on them jumping into the air and high-fiving as a silhouette.
And then executive producer Ben Semenchuk.
Do 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 do. That's the credit music.
Episode of Courtney Adjourned. I really hope you enjoyed this week.
Well, that is Courtney adjourned for this week.
Shit, I had so much fun doing that. I feel like we should write it now.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if NBC listens to our podcast and express some interest, then definitely.
Yeah, I just feel I feel so relieved after doing that. I feel like it's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I what I reckon is well, me and Harry, we like to treat our listens like ratings kind of thing. Like not in the sense that, we compare our listens to other people's listens or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's more the sense that like we get personal pride out of the amount of listens we get each week. So if you felt this was a really good episode of hard-hitting TV dramedy, then get your friends to listen to it. And I reckon if we break a certain amount of listens by next week, this show, Courtney Adjourned, might get picked up for a full season on this podcast.
Do another episode? That would be awesome.
Well, that's only if we're getting enough listens. Like, let's actually put this like ratings. Like, if we don't get the ratings from this episode, then that's the last we like the pilot's not going to get picked up.
Okay, so you're treating it like Channel 101. Well, I think that's a good idea. But thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. We're sorry that the last episode was kind of depressing, but we picked it up with Courtney Adjourned.
Yeah, and like, you guys should be happy because we're giving you two episodes 1 week.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, in the span of a week, like it's not going to be released in the this wasn't like released in the same week, but because of like I had to edit stuff and make sure it's
Yeah.
yeah. There's a lot of dead air that I cut out because. That's just something that nobody should really listen to. But thank you so much for listening this week. I'm Harrison Engstrom.
I'm Ben Semenchuk.
And this was Backroom Pitching. It's so great to be back, and we can't wait for next week's episode, or a new movie. I mean, I feel like we did really, really well this week.
Well, you did most of it, so you did well, but we'll see.
Yeah, I feel like we had a great discussion beforehand about video games and us being fairly sexist. I think we followed it up.
No, it was definitely a good episode this week, or this time.
Thank you so much for listening. Remember to rate us on iTunes. I totally forgot that that's a thing. We'll be
But
back.
also subscribe.
Yes.
Like, do everything. Just go onto our iTunes page and click as many things that you think will be beneficial for us as possible.
And leave a review if you think it sucks. You know, leave a 1-star, 2-star review and tell us, ways we can improve. Or otherwise, leave us a 5-star.
And make sure if you do that, leave your email so we can send you some hatred.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, give us good feedback. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. This has been Harrison.
And Ben.
And thank you so much. Bye.